From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Most of us know at least one invasive species. Here in Utah, for example, we just hate the tamarisk that thrives along the rivers in the Southwest. The plants were brought here a long time ago and with the best of intentions, but environmental groups tell us they soak up so much water, they deplete aquifers and dry up rivers. So the tamarisk is the bad guy in this story, and the environmental journalist Fred Pierce says, we like stories with good guys and bad guys. But what if it was more complicated than that? In his book, Pierce explores new thinking among ecologists that challenges this idea that native is good, alien is bad. Really, this is a story about how we see nature, and it makes the case for a new idea of what's wild. Fred Pierce will join us today to talk about it after the news.
Hey there, podcast listener. This is Benjamin Bombard. I'm one of the producers of Radio West. Thanks for downloading this episode of the show. If you're a regular listener of the podcast, think about becoming a sustaining member of KUER. It's as little as $5 a month, and you can find out how to do that by visiting KUER.org. And thanks a bunch.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. In his new book, the environmental journalist Fred Pierce tackles one of the taboos of the environmental movement, the idea that invasive species are throwing off the balance of nature. And wherever you are, there are invasive species, and often there are extensive and expensive efforts to get rid of them. Think about zebra mussels and tamarisk plants. But in his book, Pierce asks whether we're, in fact, fearing these ecological outsiders too much. And he challenges the idea that native is good and alien is bad. But not just that. Pierce also wonders if, in fact, we might need these invasives, given the damage humans have done to the planet. After all, they are survivors. And isn't that the real test for any species? Fred Pierce's book explores the new thinking about invasives and what it could mean for conservation movements. He's proposing a new wild. In fact, that's the title of his book, The New Wild: Why Invasive Species Will Be Nature's Salvation. And Fred Pierce is joining us today to talk about it. Fred Pierce is an environmental journalist, as I said. He is a writer based in London. His books include When the Rivers Run Dry and The Land Grabbers. He's joining us today from the studios of the BBC in London. And Fred Pierce, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Hi. Good to be with you.
Well, let me begin with something you say in the book, because you mentioned having written articles for years about the harm that alien species have done, and you say there was certainly truth in all of those stories, for sure, but you came to realize that you were missing a bigger picture at some point. What was the bigger picture you were missing?
The bigger picture is that I think alien species, invasive species, whatever we want to call them, are in reality part of nature's fight back against all the damage that we've done to nature, to ecosystems over the years. I'm a conservationist. I believe in protecting nature, supporting nature, encouraging nature wherever I can. But it seems to me that getting hold of the idea that species, whether they've been introduced by us or accidentally or deliberately or just through natural processes, are somehow bad for the ecosystems that they invade or move into is simply wrong. Mm. Mostly they increase the biodiversity of those ecosystems. So where alien species come in, usually there's more species because the numbers arriving greatly outnumber any extinctions. Extinctions are very rare. Right. So they invigorate ecosystems. They revive them after we've damaged them, whether we're chopping down woodland or polluting soils or whatever it is we're doing. These species, after all, because they're invading, they're the colonists. They're the go-getters. They are the can-do species. They're pretty good at this kind of thing. They're pretty good at taking over, managing ecosystems, building up soils, improving the ability of nutrients to get recycled through systems, all the kind of things that ecologists are in favor of. Alien species, invasive species, they're really good at this. Mm. So I found it very odd that we've got into a situation where we regard them as the enemy rather than the friend of nature.
So you're challenging some pretty widely held assumptions here. And I suppose you've been bracing for some pushback. And I'm because you write, in fact, about the fact that there is this kind of dogma that exists around this idea of nature being balanced. And I'm wondering what kind of reaction you're getting here.
The reaction I tend to get is, well, yeah, Fred, okay, we hear what you say, and obviously, you know, there's some logic in what you say, but many people say, yes, but we really just don't like these alien species. Mm. We don't like them. We don't want them. They do things that we don't want to do. And my answer to that is, well, we as sort of humans, as kind of sort of dominant people on the planet, we have, I guess, some rights to remove species that are a particular problem for us. If you were sitting in the Florida Everglades and worrying about Burmese python there, we might have a reasonable case for thinking, whoa, we have a problem here.
Right.
And that's fair enough. But I don't think this is about conservation or protecting nature. I think this becomes more about making life, nature convenient for us. Mm. So I think real conservationists should be looking at the dynamism of nature, how nature is able to adapt and change according to circumstances. And that seems to me the essence of nature. I think one of the problems that conservation has got into, and ecologists more general very often, not all, but very many ecologists, is the idea that nature is passive, is fragile, that it ought to be unchanging. And therefore, if we see an ecosystem changing or some new species coming in, we think that's bad. We think change is bad. And that comes from some quite deep-seated ideas, I think, probably both culturally, but also in science, about the idea of ecosystems evolving to some state of perfection,
yeah.
And having reached that point, we should protect them to be as they are. But I don't think nature's like that. I think nature is much more dynamic than that. And we know that's how nature evolves. That's how evolution happens, all those Darwinian processes.
But you say...
Really is much more dynamic, and we should encourage that.
You seem to be suggesting, in fact, and we'll get more into this as we go along, but that there's kind of a misreading of Darwin, that Darwin didn't, in fact, get some sense that nature evolved to some sense of perfection. He didn't believe it to be like that.
No, Darwin said nothing about that at all. Darwin believed that species evolved and adapted to get on. They were constantly changing to fit into their environment and to be better at living in their environment. And that's all undoubtedly true. But he never had any suggestion that that nature, if you like, evolution was working towards some sort of perfection, some sort of perfect climax ecosystem, ecologists sometimes call it, some sort of perfect state, the perfect rainforest, the perfect wetland, the perfect coral reef. Charles Darwin never said anything about that. He was really rather interested in migrant species moving around, and used to have correspondence with people asking them about if they saw any new species coming in. He was really interested in that because he saw that as a sign of evolution taking place and saw alien species moving around the world as part of the evolutionary process. So again, he saw that as nature doing its stuff rather than some kind of aberrant, dangerous idea about sort of nature going wrong. He thought it was nature going right. There was a predecessor to him, the French scientist called Lamarck, who had this idea about perfectibility of nature. He'd come up with the idea of evolution, though he didn't really work out the processes. And Lamarck thought that there was evolution would work towards some sort of perfect state. But Darwin never did.
Yeah.
And the evidence is surely that nature doesn't do that. Nature just moves on. And species are just out for what they can get and to improve their own lives. They're not working for some sort of, collective perfection. There's no kind of nirvana in nature.
Well, it's interesting also, it seems that what you're saying is we tend to take ourselves out of the ecological equation, humans, because a lot of this story is about human migration and the fact that we have always, as we've moved as a species and adapted to these different environments, we take different species with us for company, for clothing, to decorate our gardens, for food, you know, for pets, all of those kinds of things. We're part of this equation, too.
Oh, we're a huge part of this these days. Nature has always been in a state of transition and change. So this is no, if you like, speeding up natural processes of species moving around the world. But we are undoubtedly doing that. We're doing it deliberately to move, as you say, to move crops to, you know, for all sorts of perfectly reasonable purposes, sometimes just because we like the idea of transplanting peaches species. Many of the European colonists going out from the UK, say, to Australia or you know, Latin America, going to Argentina or somewhere, would always take their favorite species with them, and some of them died out and some of them thrived. Mm-hmm. So we've always done that, but I don't think that's... And it can create some problems, I guess, for certain ecosystems. But by and large, it adds to the diversity of species. As I say, one of the things that you find that the more alien species, the more invasive species there are in an ecosystem, the more biodiversity there is. Extinctions are very rare, whereas the increased number of species just kind of builds up. So you have much richer ecosystems. And I think it's reasonable to compare that with human societies. Some people are very fearful of foreign people moving in, especially in Europe. You know, we're a bit old world, and we sort of don't like foreigners coming in. We think we should have sort of native people. And, you know, some people hold these ideas. And yet... when foreigners do come in, when migrants come in, they stir things up a bit, they can create a bit of trouble. But by and large, they're a very dynamic element in cultural society and generally improve the economics of societies. We could have a long argument about this, of course, but I think in general that's true. And I think, you know, nature works much the same way. Mm. Movement of species improves society, improves ecosystems, much in the same way as the movement of people can improve and certainly make more diverse human societies.
Let's talk about a story of one place that is, as you say, almost entirely a synthetic ecosystem. It's really where you begin in the book, this island in the South Atlantic Ocean called Ascension Island. And we should just sort of go back a bit to some of the earlier observations of the place. Darwin, you mentioned, he visited this place in, I think it was 1836, and it was, he complained about its naked hideousness. I mean, the place was fairly desolate at that time.
It's right out in the middle of the Atlantic, in the middle of the South Atlantic. There isn't another island of any sort for about 1,000 miles, something of that sort. And yeah, it was a volcanic hulk. It had been there about 10 years. A few species had showed up, but very few. Basically, there were some ferns up on the mountain. There was a now endemic or some point a land crab had arrived there and had moved in, and it evolved. It's more or less its own species now. And there were a few turtles on the beaches, and that was about it. Now, the British took over the island in the early part of the 19th century, so around 200 years ago. They used it as a kind of naval base, a refueling point for ships moving around the British Empire. And they started importing trees principally, but they imported animals and birds from back home in the UK, and they imported trees from around their colonies. Yeah. So they started planting trees from Australia, trees from Brazil, trees from the Caribbean, trees from South Africa, and so on. In a kind of hodgepodge, really. There were some ideas that if you planted some trees, you might get more rainfall, which did turn out to be true, and that would help the water supplies on the island. So there was a kind of purpose to it. But the result was that they started creating what you might call an accidental rainforest, a complete mishmash of species that they just happened to plant. And some of those species, I think, came with a few insects. So you began to build up this completely made-up ecosystem. And it's functioned remarkably well. It recycles water, it produces more rain. The species seem to interact with each other. The native ferns now grow mostly on these imported trees. So this kind of, it sort of contradicts many of our ideas that we have about ecology and about ecosystems, that they are kind of evolve over thousands, probably millions of years to some perfect state with every species having evolved for its own little niche. Really, that's not what it looks like on Ascension Island. And I would argue that most places around the world in one way or another are a bit like that. They've all been influenced by human activity in one form or another. They're all also constantly changing as a result of entirely natural processes. Yeah. So Ascension Island becomes a kind of model for what I think the world really is, which is a mishmash of species. Some ecologists talk about novel ecosystems. Just kind of the stuff that shows up, makes do. Some of it disappears, doesn't get going. Some of it mixes in. Some of it causes a bit of a fuss. Maybe you have a boom in one species and then it declines again. But at any rate, you have a sort of chaotic muddle. Mm. And I think that's how most ecosystems, natural or human-influenced, are. They're a muddle. They're not a perfect thing. They are a muddle. And that's what nature is. Nature, it's wild. Nature really is wild. It's not perfected. It's a wild, rather chaotic system.
It's there's this growing movement among ecologists called this ecological theory called ecological fitting, a term you mentioned coined by the ecologist Daniel Jansen. And one of the people who subscribes to this idea is in Utah, in fact, here, Thomas Jones at Utah State in Logan. Mm. This idea that, again, the species don't necessarily co-evolve, that they can fit in and become an ecosystem by fitting in. I guess that's the reason for the term.
That's it. I mean, that's the point. And that was what Darwin was onto, I think, in his ideas about nature. And I think it's becoming, there's new ecologists who are a kind of sort of subgroup among ecologists now begin to talk much more about this. This is really how nature is. I mean, there is co-evolution, and you can see examples where insects and flowers co-evolve to suit each other's needs better. But most of the time, most species are just kind of getting along. They're adapting, they're changing, they're sometimes evolving. But there is no sort of blueprint that they have to work to. And because that's true, it means that there is nothing intrinsically bad about an alien species, an invasive species coming in from somewhere else. If everything had been sort of highly co-evolved and everything had fitted together and evolution had done this and evolution had reached this state of perfect ecosystems, then, of course, alien species, outsider species, would be bad news because they could only be disruptive. Mm. But if you have this different idea of ecosystems as being a sort of mishmash, species just fitting in as best they can or disappearing or whatever, then, you know, alien species coming into could be judged on their merits, if you like. We can see whether they do a useful job or not, but there's nothing intrinsically bad about them. So I think it's interesting, I think, to put together the new ideas about alien species as not intrinsically bad with the new ideas about ecology as a constantly changing system of ecological fitting and so on. If you put those two ideas together, it gives us a very different perspective on both on how ecology works, how nature works, but also on what, as conservationists, we should be thinking. Because much conservation is about trying to protect systems we think should be unchanging. But if that's not the purpose of conservation, it gives us a whole new way of thinking about nature and how we can help nature, but also about how nature itself will evolve and develop quite naturally to meet some of the threats that we undoubtedly are posing to it.
Let me read a few emails that raise some questions. Jesmond writes from Park City, maybe humans did take their favorite species along with them when they traveled around the world, but is that always a good thing or even a benign thing? Has there not been a mistake somewhere along the line, an occasion where our introduction, whether it was purposeful or not, has been detrimental, which is the same kind of point that Marco makes, who says that maybe you're ignoring the obvious examples like the rats and possums in New Zealand, cats wiping out all the native birds in Hawaii, or here at home, in Utah in particular, he's saying carp destroying Utah Lake. Diversity is good and monoculture is bad, he says, even if, he says, all plants and animals are of equal value. So respond to this, because we should say, in all fairness, Fred Pierce, you do deal with the mayhem that are caused by species like rats, for example.
Yes, I mean, I begin early chapters in the book describe the quite damaging effects, especially rats, and especially on small islands if they work their way through seabirds, for instance, that are ground nesting and really have no defence against rats. I'm not saying that it makes everything sweet and lovely. But island ecosystems have a very small number of species, and they're very atypical and really not typical. They are almost like colonies of a handful of species rather than the big ecosystem. But undoubtedly, under some circumstances, kind of havoc happens. But I think the idea that, you know, we have to think of this as bad or good, I'm not sure about it. I'm not sure that nature kind of thinks in terms of bad and good. It thinks of change and difference and so on. So I think we have to be a little bit careful. The examples you mentioned, New Zealand and Hawaii, they are certainly places which have been invaded by very large numbers of species that have come in from the old world and from elsewhere. They started off with quite a small number of rather unusual species sometimes and have been invaded by quite large numbers from outside. We've lost some quite interesting things, mostly not due to the aliens arriving, mostly due to humans hunting and so on. But there have been a few losses. But these places are much more biodiverse than they used to be. There are many more species on Hawaii than there were before. There are many more species on New Zealand before humans showed up, either the sort of first settlers there or more recently Europeans. So insofar as it is true that more biodiversity is good, and many ecologists have that as an article of faith, if that is true, then by and large, alien species have been good for ecosystems, if you want to use that good and bad language. But I don't really see that. I mean, I don't deny that you can cause short-term, especially havoc, with bringing in a new species which can just sort of run amok, and rats and cockroaches and things are very good at doing that kind of thing. But I'm not sure that it's bad in any sort of sense that that nature would understand. It's a bit red in tooth and claw, but that's about all.
Fred Pierce is with us. His new book is called The New Wild, Why Invasive Species Will Be Nature's Salvation. We'll take a quick break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about invasive species or alien species, whatever you want to call them, like tamarisk and gypsy moths and zebra mussels. The environmental journalist Fred Pierce set out to write a book about the devastation caused by these species, how they squeezed out native plants and creatures. But what he found instead surprised him, that there were the stories of mayhem, of course, but the book he actually wrote challenged that conventional wisdom that native is good and invasive is bad. He's joining us today to explain what the science is saying and challenging this thinking. The book is called The New Wild, Why Invasive Species Will Be Nature's Salvation. Let's take a telephone call from Amy, who's joining us in Salt Lake. Amy, welcome.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm looking forward to reading this book because it is definitely bringing up some topics that I haven't considered when I consider invasive species. And I'm curious about this concept that your guest is talking about when it comes to the claim that wherever invasive species arrive, they increase biodiversity, they increase species richness. Because from what I can tell and from the studies I know about, they may have increased the number of species potentially, but generally they outcompete natives, and you have the same invasive species from ecosystem to ecosystem, whether it be an English house sparrow or a starling or cheatgrass. So overall, it's reducing species richness and increasing extinction rates. So I'd like to hear more about that topic.
Fred Pierce?
Yeah, locally, I think what is right to say is that locally they usually increase biodiversity because they may outcompete some locals, certainly in the short term, while there's maybe some kind of adaptation process going on. It varies. By and large, there are very few extinctions, so you land up with more species. Now, I do accept the point about homogenization, if you like, of global biodiversity. We may lose some species. Well, we do lose some species overall, and we have a rise of generalists, if you like, whether they're sort of rats or cockroaches or whatever it may be, who will tend to turn up in more places, but just because they can travel the world and take advantage of our sort of courier services. I think that is an issue, and that's an important issue, and I don't dismiss that. In terms of the health of nature, I'm not sure that there is global biodiversity matters a great deal. I think local diversity is much more important if we want healthy ecosystems that are able to adapt to the various threats posed, whether it's sort of climate change or whatever else it is that humans are doing, or indeed anything else is doing. So I do accept that that's an issue. I think in the long run, new species, alien species, invasive species kind of stir up nature. And there's good evidence, I think, that in the long run, they're going to encourage more evolution, more hybridization of species. So they will create a burst of evolution. That may take a little time, but there is evidence that you see a burst of evolution going on in areas with more species coming in. So I accept what you say, and I don't want to say that that is of no significance. But I think in the way that nature in the past has responded to great catastrophes, whether it's sort of meteorites hitting the Earth or huge volcanic eruptions or so on, by having a sudden burst of evolution to fill available spaces in nature, if you like. I think we can see that happening as a result of some of human activities. And my feeling, and it's not just me, it's many ecologists who are saying this, is that invader species, the go-getter species, as I say, are really rather helpful in that process. They encourage the evolutionary process. They encourage the ability of nature to recolonize places that have been messed up. So it'll be different nature. It won't look the same. And there are risks about losing some sort of outlier species. But, you know, nature has always had extinctions ticking over. And while that process may speed up, I think also that the species of the evolution will speed up as well. So, you know, I take what you say and I don't dismiss what you say, but I think there's another side to the story.
It's interesting. Let's talk about the tamarisk, because this is such an issue in this region of the world. One of the things you mention about there's this, you talk about how there's this kind of new thinking about the tamarisk. I mean, that emerged with ecologists, that tamarisks do crowd out native species on some levels, but that they only move if others disappear. And this is kind of this really interesting point. You say that tamarisk does really well on rivers that are downstream of dams, where the dams have eliminated a natural spring flood conditions. But where there are these natural floods on so-called untamed rivers, the cottonwoods and the willows continue to dominate that area. So would you talk about that? Because that's an interesting point you make.
Yes, I think that really is interesting. And that's research that's uncovered that wasn't tied to any agenda about whether alien species are good or bad. It's just what comes out of looking at where species are colonizing, and equally important, the places that they're not colonizing. And I think it speaks to a kind of more general rule here, that alien species, when they really take off, when they, if you like, come to dominate ecosystems, whether we regard that as bad or not, when that happens, they're usually moving into environments that have been changed or messed up or abused by humans. In other words, human activity has created new ecological niches, if you like, new places where different species can perform a role in the landscape, in the ecosystem. And so you find that tamarisk is, as you say, moving into places where the natural flood regimes of rivers have been modified. The other thing to say about them, I think, is that they get demonized as being water guzzlers.
Right.
And there's a long history in the West of tamarisk being seen as a great water guzzling crop. Of course, it was originally introduced in the West as a way of bringing the West back from spreading deserts during the 1930s, during the Dust Bowl times. It was introduced because it could have deep roots. It could go down and find water in places that perhaps other species couldn't. So it was able to green the desert a bit and perhaps stabilize soils. But the problems arose, if we see them as problems, because it was too good at that. And maybe, as you say, crowded out other species like cottonwood and willow. But actually, you know, they don't use more water than these other species. They've been kind of demonized more because they're outsider species. And there is a history of kind of just want to blame the outside species for whatever bad is going on. Out west, it's a curious kind of cultural thing that we have.
Yeah, well, don't you say that in fact the tamarisk is no more of a water thief than the native cottonwood or the willow? But because it's an outsider,
no, it's
as you say, we demonize it.
But of course, we would never talk about cottonwoods as water thieves because we regard them as native and part of the natural ecosystem. But if tamarisk comes in and takes a similar amount of water, we start using language like it's a water thief. So it's a it's just like one law for the natives and another for species that regard as invaders. And I don't think that's a whatever we may think about tamarisk, it's not a very good way of doing science.
Let's go back to the phones. Adrian is with us in Taylorsville. Adrian, welcome.
Doug, I'm glad to get on your show. I do a lot of volunteer conservation work on the Jordan River, which is this disappearing ribbon of ecosystem through the Salt Lake Valley to other counties. I want to ask a question about, you know, I've seen where people have used soil sterilants as Roundup or other things. The first thing back tends to be things like Scotch thistle and other such invasive weeds. Weeds tend to be just a plant that has grown someplace that we don't like it, or it doesn't work well with the other ecosystem. But, you know, Phragmites, I don't know if Red knows much about that, but that is the most tenacious plant we have as far as it chokes up ditches and streams and drainages, but also all the wading birds for the shallow wading habitat. I mean, it can grow amongst the trees where it's competing with the canopy up to 12 to 14 feet high. It's a tremendous fire hazard. When it burns, it loves it. It's a grass. It comes right back. And I was wondering how much you knew about Phragmites.
But wait, Adrian, what's the question there, though? You're sort of making the point that invasives are bad, that they do choke out the natives. Is that all you wanted to say?
Well, like I said, it's messing with the current habitat. And when you try to rejuvenate a wetland, any shallow waterland that a lot of the birds along the rivers and waterways, you know, they go out there and feed, and they can't feed because it grows so thick they're pushed off.
Right. Fred Pierce responded to that. What do you think?
I don't equate change with being bad. Yeah, if an invasive species comes in and it's successful, it will certainly change habitats. As I mentioned earlier, habitats are constantly changing anyway. You mentioned fire as a hazard. Well, fire is a very important part of ecosystems, so I don't think you should think that anything that encourages fire is intrinsically bad. We have to look at it to see exactly what the results are. But fire is an important part of the renewal of ecosystems, and I think invasive species can have similar roles. They can do good and bad, depending on how you look at it. The zebra mussel in the Great Lakes regarded as a real problem because it's damaged water intakes and that kind of thing. But it actually cleared out an awful lot of the horrible pollution. You remember Lake Erie used to be regarded as, you know, the dead lake, one of the most polluted places on the planet. Zebra mussels have been an important part, because they're filter feeders, an important part of cleaning that lake up. Changing the ecosystem very dramatically, because now you can get vegetation on the bottom of the lake, which you could never have before. That's been bad for some fish, but good for some other fish, like the lake sturgeon there. So you have change. They undoubtedly bring change, and I certainly would not deny that they don't have dramatic effects on ecosystems. What I would say is that we shouldn't confuse change with badness. Change for me is very often about the dynamics, the dynamic nature of nature. Sometimes we don't like what we see, and you know, if we don't like it, we have a perfect right to do something about it. I'm not saying that we shouldn't fight back against alien species that we really don't like. But, you know, we need to think about the good side of some of these things, as we've been discovering with tamarisk in the West. It's become a really important habitat for endangered birds. It suddenly turns out that ecologists might be in favor of saving tamarisk because it's a brilliant habitat. So, we've got to look at both sides.
That seems to be one of the larger lessons of the book, that in conditions where humans have altered the landscape, these so-called invasive species like tamarisk could be seen as kind of helpful in mitigating those effects.
Yeah, and I'm just intrinsically reluctant to jump to the conclusion that we should be trying to rip up or kill off or otherwise get rid of anything that's in nature that looks like it's being successful. Mm. We may say it's being too successful. But, you know, I think we should be a little bit careful about thinking that nature's successes are somehow bad. It doesn't seem to me like good conservation.
One final point on tamarisks before we head to a break here. Steve from Salt Lake City makes the point, and maybe we should clarify. He says that it's wrong to suggest tamarisks only colonize streams downstream of dams, that in fact there are tamarisks in so-called wild flowing rivers. You make that point too.
That's certainly true. Yeah. Yes, I wouldn't suggest that they only go there. But they, there are some good studies showing that they are especially invasive, if you like, in those kinds of environments, simply because they're moving into somewhere which is, ideal for them. So it's not kind of too surprising.
Fred Pierce is with us. His book is The New Wild: Why Invasive Species Will Be Nature's Salvation. I'll take another break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now with the journalist Fred Pierce. We're talking about his new book, The New Wild: Why Invasive Species Will Be Nature's Salvation. Fred Pierce, I wanted to ask you about something you write. There's this section you write about America, the particulars of America. And kudzu is another one of those fast-growing vines that Americans have loved and then hated. And you said when you were writing about this that something – you noticed something cultural going on, that it fits with this American image of the Deep South, in this case, because kudzu's all over the Deep South, being depraved and unruly, that kudzu was part of a myth, that it was a symbol of something. What did you mean by that?
I think it's become a myth. I mean, I'm not an American. I should be a little bit careful about this. But that's my sense of just reading the language, the way in which kudzu is described as this sort of predatory, unruly, uncontrollable kind of weed invading everything. There's something sort of hot and steamy and about it. And as I say, I'm not an American, but it feeds into sort of my stereotypes about the American South, perhaps. But I wonder how, you know, plants and animals, too, are sort of iconic for us in many ways. They speak to our some of our deepest emotional feelings, but are also our deepest feelings about landscapes. And maybe this is why, you know, we dislike newcomer species so much, is that they disrupt our quite deeply embedded sense about how landscapes should be. I've talked to scientists who would tell you, you know, talk in roughly the same terms I have about alien species, who nonetheless say, yeah, but if I see one in my backyard or when I'm out on a walk on the fields, I will rip it up. I know there's no science, there's no sort of ecological basis for doing that, but I'll kind of rip it up because I just don't like it. So, I mean, I'm not, you know, I think these are, I'm not decrying these thoughts. I think they're perfectly legitimate. We have a right to think culturally about our landscapes. But I think that's quite often what we're doing. And when we are being very negative about alien species, it's often for that reason. So there's no, perhaps there's no great harm in it, though it can sound a bit like wanting to get rid of foreign people as well, and a little touch of xenophobia in there. But it's I don't want to push that too far. Yeah. But I think it is sort of part of our cultural landscape, and that's perhaps why we react rather strongly sometimes to new species coming onto into our lands.
Well, you do trace where these myths come from, or at least where you figure they might come from. I mean, this idea that alien species are, you know, things to be feared is a myth that you explore, and you mentioned that in some cases it took hold. It was influenced by a British ecologist by the name of Charles Elton, who kind of used militaristic language. Talk about that idea of that myth taking hold.
Yeah, he was one of the sort of founders of, well, was the founder really of the science of exploring alien species, invasive species. And he was writing in the late 40s, early 1950s, and he started using military metaphors. He compared the spread of invasive species around the world to a nuclear Armageddon. He said this is as important a change to landscapes as setting off a nuclear bomb. Now, that's pretty extreme kind of language to use, and maybe he was just trying to sell copies of his book. But I think, you know, we do kind of think a bit like that. There is a sense of, you know, very basic things being undone when we allow the ecology of places that we know and love to be changed. And as I'm saying, I don't decry that. I think that's perfectly reasonable. But I think we need to separate that kind of feeling from a sense of what nature really wants and what we should be doing as conservationists. And I think the people who, like me, who are keen on conservation, who want to promote nature in the landscape and have more species and more nature around, not least because it's very helpful for us, but really just for its own sake, then we should think very hard before we join that demonizing of species because they happen to come from somewhere else. As I said earlier, I think we need to see them as part of an important part of nature, an important part of nature's dynamism.
Mm. Well, here's a question that comes. I wonder if you gave any thought to a different name for invasive or alien species. Maybe they need a rebranding, this question says, which you kind of talk about in the book, that there need to be new icons, new ways of talking about this.
Well, yes. I mean, I use phrases like go-getter species and colonist species in a good sense. The species that are able to move into places that have been messed up and able to make good. So, yeah, I mean, in much of the book, I do use phrases like invasive and alien because those are the terms that are widely used and including in scientific literature. They're quite loaded terms, but they're used routinely by ecologists to describe the processes they're looking at. But, yeah, I prefer more more positive terms, maybe comparing them to, you know, sort of humans who are colonizing, moving in, taking over, the go-getters, the carpetbaggers. You know, I mean, that's good so far as I'm concerned. Hmm.
A question from Jason. He wanted to know if you have any comments on people arguing that climate change is really nothing more than just a change in the environment that has benefits as well as detriments. How do you respond to that? It's a good question, actually.
Yeah, I think it is. I think probably climate change is going to be more of a problem for humans than it is for nature, or potentially. Climate change is I've written quite a lot about it over the years. It's a very big change that we're making to the chemistry of the atmosphere, apart from the climate and the chemistry which will impact on the climate that we have in many ways, whether it's melting ice caps or changing weather systems or just plain getting warmer in most places. But climate change is something which nature can respond to if we let it. Species will move. The issue of speed is important. Sometimes things may happen too fast. You know, trees can't move that fast, perhaps, but whereas some other species can move faster. Nature will want to respond to climate change in the best way it can by moving. Mm. And some ecologists talk about the need to create corridors to help nature move as the inevitable face of climate change comes through over the next few decades. But other ecologists sort of say, whoa, hang on here, this is invasive species, this is alien species, we're allowing them to move in. But I really don't know how nature is going to respond to climate change other than by moving. So I think we're going to have to get used to the fact that, and I think we will get used to the fact that species, migrating species moving around, is a natural part of what nature does. It will have to do it, otherwise whole ecosystems are going to disappear because they will not be able to live in the new climates that are emerging. So again, I think it's a natural. I'm not saying that therefore we don't have to worry about climate change. I think we have to worry a great deal about climate change, not least because of the effects that it will have on human societies. But I think nature does have adaptive capabilities, and one of the tasks that conservationists have over the coming decades is to help nature in that process. So I think creating those corridors untouched or at least not completely destroyed habitats that species can move through as they need to move to keep up with changing climate systems. I think we need to encourage that and help that, and that's an important part of conservation in the coming decades. People talk, and E.O. Wilson, a famous biologist, ecologist talks about the need for have restorative ecosystems, restoration ecology in the 21st century. And I think a lot of restoration ecology is going to be about helping species move.
Let's take one more call. Kenyon is with us in Salt Lake City. Kenyon, welcome.
Hello. I don't have a question. I just have a comment, I guess, an observation I made. I walked across America last year. I started in March in New Jersey and made it to San Francisco in November, so 8 months. And what I noticed is when I made it out west, the sagebrush, it's not invasive out here, but I didn't realize how much I missed it. It was part of, what I consider the vegetation out here and what I've grown accustomed to. But something that is invasive out here, but to me it's normal, and I'm not sure the name of it, but the slang is the Russian olive tree.
Right.
And the reason I like it so much is it's actually blooming right now. It smells so good. It's so incredible. And to me, that's normal. So it's just an observation on what invasive species are to me, the good and the bad. To some people, it's good and bad. But anyway, I just wanted to make that comment of walking across America and what I consider its home. So that's it.
Fred Pierce, I think
that's quite interesting.
Yeah.
Alien, what do we mean by alien? Is this something that is moving across from the East Coast to the Midwest, or moving from the Midwest to the West Coast? Does that make it alien? It's not crossing any international borders, but some people who are in charge of national strategies for alien species think it's really important about whether something crosses borders. We have an issue in Europe now where we're going to have, or we are having, a Europe-wide rule on combating invasive species, which are beginning to be seen as a problem here. And it's going to require countries all over the European Union to take the same approach. So if a species is invasive in one part of Europe, it'll be called invasive everywhere. Mm. That seems to me a bit strange. But so we get tied up in these kind of bureaucratic knots over what is invasive and what is alien, and therefore what approach we should take to them. I think we need to back off this a long way and treat species much more on their merits rather than demonizing them because they crossed some state line somewhere.
And finally, about a minute left, you say we need to kind of reboot our ideas about nature. I guess that's what you mean.
Hmm. Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think we need to change our basic thinking, our basic sort of paradigm of conservation is to protect what exists, to try and stop change, to try and allow endangered species to survive and to look after natives and to expunge alien species or things that seem to come from outside. And I think that's the wrong approach. I think when we're talking about conservation of nature, we shouldn't be thinking about the conservation of specifics of what exists. We should think about the conservation of the dynamism of nature, nature's ability to evolve and adapt. That's what's got nature through, tens, hundreds of millions of years on this planet. And I think it's what it will get nature through all the things that humans are doing. But let's give it a helping hand. But let's recognize that if we are for nature, we are for conservation, we also have to be for dynamism, for change, for, if you like, the spirit of renewal in nature.
Fred Pierce, his book is The New Wild: Why Invasive Species Will Be Nature's Salvation. He joined us from the studios of the BBC in London. Fred Pierce, thanks very much for the time.
Thank you.
Radio West is a production of KUER News, directed by Tim Slover, produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.